You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Mike Valkovsky, a former KUSD school board member, Sammy Rangel, the life technician and executive director of Life After Hate, Steve Brown, a retired professor of educational leadership, and former Kenosha Unified School superintendent, Joe Manji. Now here's today's Education Matters moderator.
So good morning, everyone. This is Joe Manji for WGTD Gateway Radio 91.1 HD. Our Saturday morning programming is Education Matters. Our theme is Kenosha being kind, practicing peace, as we interview courageous and kind people who continue to go the extra mile to make a difference for the communities of southeastern Wisconsin, a better place to live, work, play, learn, and grow. So welcome Kenosha, welcome Racine, welcome Lake Geneva, welcome Elkhorn, and welcome the northern coast of Chicago suburbs. So thanks to our Gateway Radio administrators, Dave Cole, Dave McGrath, our own developmental specialist, Troy McDonald, an engineer, Russ Wellner, and to President Brian Albrecht for this opportunity. Special thanks to Troy, our Harvard University John F. Kennedy graduate student who is coordinating our efforts today. Thank you, Troy. So as we begin our talk this morning, a shout out to all of our teachers in southeastern Wisconsin as we celebrate the closing of the 2020-2021 school year. Teachers affect eternity. We can never tell where our influence stops. And as one unified teacher has said over and over, my kids are my heartbeat. So thank you to all of you for carrying us through a year embraced with so many challenges with the pandemic. So we are very, very fortunate today to have two very special educators, both close friends. I'm honored to have them as friends, Mary Motter and Dr. Todd Price. Mary and Todd are both major contributors to Peace Learning Circles with us in Kenosha and Racine, lifelong educators. Both are parents. Actually actively involved in our community with many service projects, and both are members of Kenosha Unified School Board. So thank you, Todd, and thank you, Mary, for all that you continue to do for the children in Unified Schools, and in addition to being parents or having been parents. Mary is a lifelong teacher of special needs students. Todd is a professor, administrator, and esteemed lecturer with National Lewis University out of Chicago. Todd and Mary, thank you so much for being with us this morning. And as long as I've known you, in the words of Terry Lawler, the esteemed teacher at Tremper High School, you both always have a smile in your voice. So, listeners, we won't be talking about unified policies this morning because so much has changed and so much is going to change over the summer. We really don't know what September is going to look like. Rather, we're going to focus on positives, on hope for the future, and how we can connect hope and the future to come together. So, Mary, let's start with you. What brought you to teaching? Special moments as a teacher, teachers who inspired you, and what brings you joy to what you do?
My road to the classroom was a bit of a circuitous one. I graduated early from Parkside. Well, graduated early from high school and early from Parkside, and then started a career in life insurance, which was not a good fit for me. my brother was my boss. I ended up leaving the insurance business when my son got sick. he had salmonella and was in the hospital for a while. And so I was a stay-at-home mom for a couple of years. And then when I did go back to work, it was as a waitress at Big Boy, the one on Sheridan Road in Kenosha. Wow. Waitress and hostess. And I probably waited on, I still run into people who say, hey, weren't you the waitress and hostess at Big Boy?
I remember that. Where was that again?
It's right on across the street from the ranch, right down the road from Carthage. And it was the little Big Boy right on Jordan Road. Yep. I was there for 5 years, and it wasn't really a path that went anywhere. In fact, at the time, they had a policy that they only hired men as managers. So anyway, I went back to school and got my certification in Broadfield Social Studies and History. And actually what made me decide to go back to school was Sue Dugan. She was, she retired from Reuther. She worked with the teen moms over there. I think it's now called the SAPR program. It had a different name at the time. But she was a teacher over at Gateway. And when my son was in Head Start, the bus would pick him up at the restaurant because I had to go to work. And they would take him over to Head Start. And then afterwards, they would drop him off at the restaurant. And he would sit at the counter. And the waitresses were always very good to him. And he'd read his little books and everything. So it was one of those things where I wanted to volunteer at Head Start. And they said that it would be good if I took the daycare class over at Gateway, which Sue was teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And Sue was very encouraging. And she said, you know, Mary, it wouldn't be very hard for you to become a teacher. You could become certified and it's a few classes and this seems to be your niche. And so I did. So I can say that Sue Dugan was my inspiration, but I did start out to be a social studies history teacher. And that's where I met my husband, Marvin, over at Bradford, was during teaching summer school over at Bradford History.
So then you change from social studies to what?
Well, I was teaching social studies in the summer and subbing for the district for 3 years when Kathy Barca contacted me, and I was subbing mostly special ed, and Kathy Barca contacted me and said, was very encouraging, said that I had done such a good job subbing with special ed, and they had a place for me. If I would agree to get an emergency license and everything. And then she said, you know, the district is going to take a chance on you and we're going to invest in you while you get your license for special ed, but we would expect you to stay. And I do remember that 25 years later, I spoke at a commencement ceremony mentioned that Kathy Barca had asked me to stay for at least 5 years, and it had been 25. So I found my heart with special education. I had the opportunity this past week to help out at the graduation ceremonies at Hillcrest. And okay. The TIME program was the second graduation there. And it was just so inspiring to see those special needs students who had overcome so many odds to get their diplomas. And they were just so proud. A lot of giggles, a lot of smiles, all dressed up, and their families, and they were just so proud. So
that's a pretty amazing story, Mary. I don't know if everybody knows all of that about you, but you've been a wonderful, wonderful educator. 25 years. Wow.
Well, actually, I usually say 28 years because I did sub for about 3.5 years. And I subbed every single day. Sometimes I went to two schools. I went to one school in the morning and I'd think I was done. And they'd call me and say, can you do the afternoon over here? So I didn't miss a day.
Wow, congratulations and thank you. Thank you so much. Okay, Todd, your turn. You're this renowned professor at National Lewis University, an administrator, and you give lectures in Turkey. Tell us how did you get started? What led you to all this?
Well, I certainly didn't aspire to those earlier. I want to start with the teachers because the teachers just inspired me in many different ways. I'm not going to mention their names because I'm going to protect the innocent, but the Spanish teacher at middle school, I just really delighted with her singing Feliz Navidad, and she would always do these things in our class to make taking on a new language fun, inviting. Little did I know how important that would become years later when I traveled to El Salvador, Nicaragua, and Cuba. So you just don't know at the time where that one teacher introducing some sort of lesson that made your world change would come to be realized maybe many years later. Mm-hmm. I like to think of my, I never give him enough credit. We just had a nice conversation and he was just at one of my conferences. My first boss basically was a man of letters. He's a very literary figure at Louisiana State University. And he hired me for my first real job. And that was teaching undergraduate freshmen at Louisiana State University, Baton Rouge. The one thing, he's complicated, kind of hard to get to know, but also very affable and very humorous. But one thing that he always left on me was that the greatest thing a teacher can do is leave an impression. And everywhere I've gone, I've always thought about that. What impression have I left with my own students? Have I succeeded in leaving something that they can take away? Then I had a very radical political teacher, world famous, who travels all over the world. I never aspired to be like him, but I was always impressed with his life. And his point to me was really everything is political. And he kind of hammered away about the inequities, the class divisions, racial problems in our school systems. But that didn't mean anything. The really important thing was that when I had some challenges at my own university and I invited him to come speak at my university to address the broader problems that still mm-hmm. plague us in higher education, I told him, I'm going to pay you nothing. And he said, when are you going to pick me up? And he came and he spoke and he delivered. And I must say, this is not a critique of higher education, but there are few people who walk the talk, and he was one of them. And I try to live up to his expectations. Couple more here real quick.
Oh, one, yeah, you got lots of time.
Okay, good. I could talk about this all day, but I'll just hit a few. My student advisor at UW-Madison, she was just such a delightful lady. She was poised, graceful, Victorian scholar. She kind of took me with my rough edges and said, it's great that you are political and you have these aspirations. That's wonderful. She says, look, I know all of these ideas and this knowledge, but I carry a flag for none of them. And that struck me. It was so interesting. She said, it's important for the educator to understand different ideas, but be careful about marshaling the evidence. And I've never forgotten that. It's one thing to have a political agenda. It's another thing to do inquiry and research. And we should model that for our kids. It's great to be passionate about politics. I am. I want different things to happen and change and reform, but you have to be truthful. You cannot marshal things to make your own story come true. The last one, I'm sure you, like, I loved Mary's story. I certainly was a dishwasher for a long time, and I had lots of connections with all kinds of different jobs along with teaching. I did dishwashing at a Chinese restaurant, and I learned from the workers there. But a very influential teacher was by no means an academic. He was very rough around the edges. He was a garbage truck driver, the father of my best friend. And he introduced me, of all people in the world, to a man named Archbishop Oscar Romero in El Salvador. Mm-hmm. Romero, of course, passed away a long time ago, but his legacy lives on. And I know you know, Joe, because you're inspired by these peacemakers about the legacy of the Jesuit. And that has carried on with me always, that mm-hmm. we have to bring peace. We have to model whatever religion you have, or if you're agnostic, that's okay. But we have to imagine ourselves as part of a broader humanity, simply put. And So Romero has always been a north light for me. So, and those are just some inspirations. And the rest of it is really, I just loved education. I always wanted to stay in it, and I managed to have done it somehow.
Well, thank you, Todd, and thank you, Mary. We're very, very fortunate to have you here today and on our school board and with Peace Circles. And so, Troy, you're there, right? Can you share how you got to where you are a little bit for us?
Well, I was not expecting that joke. No, but wow, that's a big question. I grew up in Illinois as the product of a single mother who is still today my biggest champion and biggest cheerleader. And we went through a lot of ups and downs, tremendous poverty. I was homeless for a lot of years. And when my family was struggling, my mother, I said, Mom, I can drop out of school. I was at Gateway Technical College at the time getting my associate's degree. And I said, Mom, I can quit. I can get a job. I can help take care of the family. She said, no. She said, I want you to stay in school and focus on that full time. And because I was getting straight A's at Gateway. Mm-hmm. And I said, my grades might suffer if I work full time, but you know, that's cool. I will do that. She said, no, I want you to stay in school full time and we'll figure it out somehow. And that sacrifice was tremendous. And eventually we did. We got on our feet. But it's been a long, long journey to where I'm at. And as you mentioned at the top of the show, I'm a student at Harvard, and I still am not surprised, because I know I was always smart. I got straight A's for almost everything that all of my educational tenure. But it still is surprising, but I just told my story and I shared what I had gone through, whether it was the abuse at the hands of my father, who, again, my mother sent us out there when we were teenagers, and he abused us terribly, and I still deal with the emotional after effects of that, the abandonment issues and everything else. But I just shared my story, and it has been amazing. I look back at myself, Joe, and I go, wow, what would the 14-year-old self who was in the closet, gay, but my mother says she knew when I was 2 years old that I was gay. I did not know. I wish she would have told me then, but I didn't know. But dealing with all of that at 14, dealing with poverty, I would come home regularly and see eviction notices or electricity notices, that one of those things would, you know, electric or cable, something would be shut off, or that we would be forced to vacate. In 1 year, we moved 3 or 4 times. And I look back at that Troy now, and I just wish I could tell him that everything's going to be okay. You're going to get your master's degree from Harvard. I've already had conversations with people at Howard University for my PhD, because I would like to go to an HBCU for my PhD. We'll see what happens. And you know, the people at Howard were telling me that I would be a get for their university. Are you kidding me? from homelessness to that is just pretty incredible. So, yeah, I appreciate you asking that, Joe. It's been a long journey and still going in the right direction.
Yes. I love you guys. It's a testament to what you've been through. And because you've been through it, you can be inspiration to kids for the future. Troy, when you mentioned mothers, I'm a kid growing up back in the day running cross country for Marquette High. And it was a sissy sport back then. We had to run around the football field and get teased and bullied by the football team. I even got picked up by the police twice running home from Marquette High to where I lived on the south side. I had to run through Jackson Park because I was suspicious looking. Here I have books in both hands. We didn't even have backpacks in those days. So, So my heroine was Wilma Rudolph, and 1960 were the first Olympics televised on our old RCA TV. First Olympics from Rome. And here's a 20-year-old Wilma Rudolph winning not one gold medal, not two gold medals, but not three gold medals. Three gold medals, she's 20 years old. So Wilma Rudolph is the backstory for Forrest Gump, because she had polio. And when she was in elementary school, her doctors said she would never walk again. Her mother said she would. So the moral of the story is always believe your mother, because by middle school, the crutches were gone. By high school, she started winning one race after another. Boom, at 20 years old, she does something that nobody had ever done before. No girl, no lady, no young lady had ever won three consecutive gold medals. So there you go. Always believe your mom. Well, here we go. We've been through, and all of us, Todd, you were at Bradford's graduation. So was I. Mary, you were at Hillcrest. And we see kids going through a year and a half that tested every aspect of everyone's humanity, courage, tenacity, spirit, and they're still walking across the stage and they're still a lilt to their step and they're still cheering. There was some somberness, but so with the past year and a half for kids, teachers, and parents, with all that's happened, Mary, why don't we start with you? What have we learned in education? And then as we go along, we can say, what can we do better? So you start.
We certainly have learned that education is dynamic and we have to be ready. We have to be ready to change and to embrace technology. Washington Middle School had a one-to-one computer initiative a few years back, and I'm not exactly sure how many. But then a year and a half ago, we had to bring the entire district up to speed. And I really applaud, leadership over at KUST, especially Chris Keckler, and the getting the computers and getting the Wi-Fi hotspots around town and the bags for the kids and the teachers bringing their laptops and the kids bringing their laptops back and forth and everything, which is still going on. So that's something that we had to do in a hurry. We weren't terribly good at it at first. We got better this year, and we're going to continue getting better with it for the future. So now we have the entire district one-to-one computers. And when we purchased, Todd and I are both on the curriculum committee for the district. When we purchased new curriculum, the deal nowadays is you obtain the license for the textbooks and they give you the hardcover books for free.
Wow.
So you're purchasing the license for the books online. And I'm thinking back to my son, Nate Motter, which you know him from school, Joe. Okay. Right. And he turned 42 the day before I turned 62. But when he was in high school, we had to have two sets of books. We had to have books at school for him in high school, especially. And then we had to have another set of books at home because his backpack on his wheelchair and stuff could not hold so many books and stuff. So we were constantly dealing with all of these textbooks. Now, Nate goes online for everything. He is currently, the pandemic did not slow him down a bit, except that he did move closer to home so we could help him out. But he is pursuing a degree in divinity. He would like to be a pastor. And he takes courses from a little church in Milwaukee, and everything is online. And he's able to do everything online. So that's just amazing that he has his Bible online. He's got his textbooks online. And so for him, technology has been such a lifesaver. And when I was at Hillcrest, I asked them, I said, how many students were here and what was happening and everything. And the teachers were actually very positive. They said that the Hillcrest students actually, many of them were very good about logging in from home, and they kind of liked having school in their pajamas and stuff. And then when they did attend, they were happy to see their friends and attend and everything. So they seem to embrace change so much better than I think as a thinking as a retired teacher. I was so glad I was retired. Thinking of the teachers that had to learn so much so fast about Google Meet and the Seesaw program, and that was for the elementary kids, and all of the different things that they had to, but they rose to the occasion. They were simply amazing.
Well, there's the Peace Corps experience always taught us that the kids, the young people who succeeded, were the ones who had lots of bumps and bruises along the way. So you develop, as you said, embracing change, you develop adaptability, resiliency, and it's not how many times you get knocked down, it's how fast can you get back up.
And just one more thing, Joe.
Yeah.
Here tonight, the Reaching for Rainbows event is mm-hmm. over at Carthage.
Okay.
And Gary Vargas is receiving one of the top awards from the Mahone Foundation, which mm-hmm. I was so happy to see. Gary was at the ceremony last night for the ITED, for the ITED graduates, those mm-hmm. Students who overcame all sorts of diversity to be able to take the tests, the ITED tests, and pass them and get their diploma against all odds. I saw girls there walking with their children, and yet they still, I heard of families whose students had to help out taking babysitting and taking care of sick relatives and different things and all the things that they had overcome. And Gary, in his commencement address, he commented on how far they had come and how much they had overcome to get there. There were something like, there were, I think there was 190 ITED graduates from all the different schools there last night, overcoming That's awesome. All sorts of different odds to be there and to graduate. And of course, Gary just said, "I'm so proud of you, and continue to make me proud, or I'll come and kick your butt."
Well, I worked with Gary Vargas at Bradford for a long, long time. He's unbelievable. He's just really good. Okay, Todd, your turn. What have you learned? What have we learned over the past year and a half? And in your mind, how can we improve?
Sure. So I know that curriculum in the context of higher education in my own university, we were actually well prepared for this terrible challenge with the COVID and the pandemic. We had already embraced many of these technologies that we're using right now, the Zoom and the teleconferencing and blended. So we persevered. We didn't miss a beat, but we certainly missed being face to face. Now, in the context of the K through 12, even before being elected, I was serving with Mary, chairing in the curriculum committee, and it was such an interesting exercise for me. The main thing I realized was that there is just so many resources and tools and ways of packaging information for our students that it's just the world is open and available to them through these packages and through these tools. The problem is that life is not a package. We need interaction with those texts. We need teachers and students engaged in meaningful work that is not just for a test score, but is solving a problem or is helping us to identify what are the real needs and what it means to be educated and engaged civically. So I found that we learned a lot this last year. I think initially parents were kind of shocked actually at how much work teachers perform. In the first part of when the shutdown happened last year, there were many surveys that showed parents were very supportive of teachers. In fact, the profession was being lauded as like really, really important. So I thought that was good. I think that I was disappointed with the toxicity that happened along the year, where things were becoming more political and partisan. And it wasn't the best example of behavior, frankly, on the part of adults, especially when their children had to deal with this and be resilient and do all these things. So I think one of the things I've learned is that it's not about I, it's about we. We as a community need to dial down toxic discourse. It helps no one, offers no solutions, and we have to come together as a big tent and help everyone prosper. I implore the adults that may be listening to this show to be the role models they can be, to seek wellness, charity. These are the same lessons I give to myself, focusing on the we over the I, imagining ourselves as part of this big tent. And I would be really remiss, I've been wanting to say this for a while, but I really want to acknowledge my colleagues on the school board. They did the heavy lifting this last year while I was trying to help out on a committee, but I did look at Madison and Milwaukee and other places and how they responded. Kenosha stepped up and was very courageous in many ways. And I think that what we're learning is that, no, we can't go back. What we want to do is to go as we are pushing this better together forward. And we're going to use the technology, but we're also going to get kids to have fun in school, to want to come to school. School should be fun, Joe. You know this. It shouldn't just be work. There should be places for children, right? Mm-hmm. There should be places for them to express the joy, to be with their friends. The kids love their mm-hmm. teachers, right? When their teachers notice them and give them acknowledgement, they soar. So this, I'll get into the next question, because I think that you wanted to bring up this issue about what can we do for the future, if that makes sense. I think we need to make school fun. I think we need to make sure that our children want to go to school. And from everything I've seen, they want to get back into the classroom. So but I'll stop there.
I would agree. We've all talked about the importance of teachers in our lives and the great job that teachers have done very quietly throughout this pandemic. And I think parents have come to realize how hard teachers are working. But there is a national teacher shortage. So for a number of years, teachers in some cases have been vilified. And so whether it's political or however you want to slice it, it is what it is. So that has caused, as well as budget cuts, that has caused fewer young people to go into teaching. So Mary, let's start with you. Any thoughts on how we reattract young people to the field of education?
I'm okay now. I had to flip back and forth there. So one of the studies that I read, and I'm trying to think of exactly the researcher that did it, but he did a study looking at pay and how it motivated people. And basically he found out that in many of the professions, such as teaching and nursing, there was a certain point where you couldn't really pay them enough to do it because of the situation. So you need to have enough pay and benefits adequate to be able to support yourself and do the things and quality of life. But then there's something more important. You have to be appreciated. And that's what, as Todd was pointing out, that's what happened early on in the pandemic when the parents were just saying, oh, we love our teachers. Oh my gosh, how did you do this? To some of the things, the political, the divisiveness that has happened more recently with the teachers and with schools and things, where the teachers are not feeling appreciated. So we have to get back to that. Now, something more, and I learned when I was going through teaching, not everyone realizes, but when you go through your student teaching, you're working full time. And in fact, they tell you that you shouldn't have another job while you're doing it. But then how do you support a family? Mm-hmm. So it is difficult. I think we have to make it easier to get through some of these classes, easier to do the student teaching, some sort of paid internship, something like that. And I'm really proud of the work that Kenosha Unified did this past year in putting together a program so that high school students who are interested in pursuing a degree in teaching can start to get some of those classes out of the way. And so they can learn before they get into college if that's what they want to pursue. I think if I had had some of those classes, I might have gone straight into teaching instead of insurance, which was not a good fit, and the big boy waitress, which was a lot of fun, but certainly wasn't as rewarding as teaching. So I might have saved myself a good 7 years. So that's what we have to do, is we have to look at some of the barriers to people becoming teachers and help them through it. And then once they're there, we have to try to listen to the teachers. We have to do our best to listen to the teachers. And I know we have talked about the Kenosha Education Association. And sometimes we have parents who, community people who are sort of saying, why are you listening to them? Why is the school board listening to them? And I know that I listen to them because they represent a large group of teachers who maybe are afraid to speak up. So I think they always need to be at the table, not directing what we do, but providing input. I think the input is so very, very important from the teachers, from a variety of sources, to find out what they need and what helps them do their job, because they are the experts.
That's excellent, excellent. So Todd, from the university standpoint, what can universities do to attract more people, young people, to education?
Well, so there are a lot of young people out there who are great candidates for teaching. And I have no doubt that over the next several years, we're going to see a return, because people need a job. They need to work. They need to provide for their families. What we can do at teacher preparation programs across universities is just what Mary said, remove some of those barriers that seem to want to keep people out instead of welcoming them in. What we want to do is get them into the teacher programs and then give them the professional development that is meaningful and helpful and put out highly qualified, effective teachers on day one. And we can do that. And we know how to do that. Mm-hmm. But there are so many programs that that work to this end and are successful. We need to cultivate them. I know Mary knows this too, in Kenosha and elsewhere, grow your own programs. How can we help our young people that are so bright and have so many talents and know the technology and have the energy and passion to find a pathway that gets them right into the classroom? I think that, you know, one of the things that my teachers, because I have brand new folks, I get them on the very first class, and then I also get experienced veterans in my doctoral program. So one of the things that they've always said ever since I've been at the university is the mm-hmm. problems with the audit culture. Boy, Joe, you must know this as an administration, but there is more reportage and testing and assessments and filing in school systems than there are in most corporations. It's really staggering the amount of auditing that goes on all the time. Look, we have to be accountable. We get that. It's a very responsible job. And I think the challenges are to make sure that our people are up to that job. But we need to also provide some relief from that constant audit. Nobody wants to be monitored all the time. Nobody wants to have to put in mindless reports about everything that's going on. Rather, let's focus on the inputs. Let's give teachers more paraprofessionals to help them. Let's give them even slightly smaller class sizes would help. Let's make sure their tools and their resources are up to date in their classrooms are well ventilated, for example, and healthy. All those things are working conditions. you know, KA and unions like that, they're actually about mostly the working conditions and grievance processes, so you can't be wrongly fired or discriminated based on your creed or your sex or your race, right? That's the protection there. They want to help people get into the middle class. Nothing wrong with that. Have a good salary. But at the end of the day, teaching is cultural work. We want to have our teachers happy and healthy and working with our kids, because our teachers' working conditions are kids' learning conditions. So if we can help move that forward, I think that we will get people back into the profession. And I know them because they're in my classroom and they're looking for jobs.
This has been wonderful. And thank you, Todd Price. And thank you, Mary Motter. We have about 4 minutes left. We need a part two, I think, because there's so much more to discuss and to carry through. But you've both given us hope, wisdom, and your compassion and kindness just rule the day. So last thoughts, everybody, Mary, Todd, Mary, take 1 minute. Final thoughts.
Thank you, Joe.
From here.
Okay. And I was hoping that you would say that, because as a teacher, a former teacher, I need to leave everyone who's listening with some homework. Okay. And it's not really hard, but it is very, very important. Everyone is looking at the KUSD budget, and they're looking at a lot of the money that we're getting from the American Rescue Plan and COVID dollars. And what they don't realize is that that is for a specific purpose, and it's not ongoing. It can't really be used for operations. Meanwhile, the Joint Finance Committee in Madison is looking at schools, and they're busily cutting money from schools. Just at the time when we need more, we need smaller classes, we need to invest more money in schools, and they're looking at cutting it to the point where, even though I'm not even sure exactly how much special education is reimbursed, this is money that has to be spent on special education students. It's mandated, and yet we're not given enough money to do so. So then we have to pull money out of our regular education budget to do it. And that's just not right. So we need people to lobby, and we need people to contact their legislature and to contact people like Robin Voss. Okay, anybody who's out in the Racine, Robin Voss area, contact him and say, we need to have adequate money for school. Governor Evers' budget was wonderful, and the Joint Finance Committee is just tearing it apart, especially with schools. And I'm sure, Todd, you'll agree.
Todd, last minute.
Yep, and I'll just echo what Mary said. She and I have been in and around on the school board. We know the school board is crafting a video. I'm sure we're going to craft a letter. Stand by, but talk to your legislators. As our Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes mentioned, this is actually an opportunity. Think of the word opportunity. We could be receiving more funds than perhaps we've ever received before. If you care about your kids and your community, you need to get involved and advocate for that funding. And we will certainly help and lead the school board.
Thank you so much, Troy, Todd, Mary. I'd like to close with one of my heroes is Nelson Mandela. This is what he had to say about education. Education is the most powerful weapon which we can use to change the world. And there can be no keener revelation of a society's soul than the way in which it treats its children. You guys are fighting for kids. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedules to be with us today. I love you guys. Troy, Todd, Mary, thank you so much. And everybody out there, education is key. We're probably going to have a part two and a part three, because there are so many questions to be answered. But thank you for listening and tuning in to Gateway Radio, WGTD 91.1 HD. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Joe.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archived programs are available on our website, WGTD.org. You're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist with the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside, and Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Good morning. This is Len Iaquinta for Community Matters.